Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge unseres IDH Talking About Podcasts. Wir haben uns heute Frau Natalia Dobrinina von der Perm State University in Russland und Herrn Professor Dr. Olvind Eile hier aus dem IDH eingeladen. Wir, damit meine ich mich und Frau Corinna Munsch, welche diese Woche für mich die Interviewführung übernehmen wird, da das Ganze im Folgenden auf Englisch sein wird. Sie werden über das Projekt Artist reden und natürlich auch ein wenig über privatere Sachen. Viel Spaß mit der heutigen Folge.
Hello, my name is Corinna and I'm filling in for Lucas today. My guests are Natalia Dobrinina and Professor Dr. Olvind Eide, and our topic is their project Artist. So, how would you introduce yourself to a new colleague?
Should I?
Yes, you can start.
Okay. So, hello. I'm Natalia Dobrinina. I'm from Perm State University. Today I'm going to speak in English. It's much easier for me than any other languages. So at the moment, I work at the university as an administrator and as a teacher. Actually, I like both. But it happens so that at the moment I'm mostly a project coordinator and I have several projects, and Artist is my favorite one. It's the newest and it is very challenging and interesting. So as to other things, I'm also a linguist, I would say, because I enjoy learning and speaking languages. So that's my favorite thing in life. So that's it. That's about myself.
Yes, thank you. Now, for the time being, since 5 years here in Cologne, I am at the university teaching and doing research. Before that, I have been a developer, project manager, organized projects from that side, and done different things in the context mostly of universities. I have also been involved in projects in different countries, and I'm really fond on working with people with different backgrounds, learning often surprising things, seeing other ways of doing things, basically. So I'm really excited about this project, which will bring me back to Russia, where I have been involved in some work before, but will for the first time bring me to Mongolia. And I really think there's a lot of potential in this. There is a lot of experience we will learn from. And of course, we also have, especially in Cologne, but also in other places, of course, quite a lot of experience in using computational methods, but also computational thinking in the humanities, and how this can improve education, basically. So I'm also very eager to get these projects started for real.
So Artist is an international project and aims to rethink humanities education in Russia and Mongolia on the basis of EU standards. That sounds like a very ambitious goal at first. How did you come up with the idea and how do you want to achieve it?
So it's a very long prehistory before this application, which actually started quite some time before I arrived here in Cologne. My predecessor, Manfred Thaller, had quite a lot of international cooperation, obviously, and even before he was started in Cologne around 2000. He worked with colleagues internationally to create the International Association of Computing History. And he was also involved in establishing the Russian Association for Computing and History in the early 1990s. He also had cooperation with the University of Perm, which I, to some extent, inherited, and we have developed it further.
Yeah, I just add, if you don't mind, Øyvind. So as far as I know this story, so it started, you're absolutely right, with the cooperation of two professors, Dr. Manfred Thaler from Cologne University and Dr. Sergei Korniyenko. It was a very good foundation. So their researchers, their schools, and many followers and students, and they were so passionate about the thing that they're doing, and they were reporting this idea of saving cultural heritage to us, to the project office. And so we were inspired by this opportunity to use this newest technologies to share the cultural heritage that each of the countries have, and also use the newest technologies to do this. So, and the enthusiasm made us try to continue this work jointly, and we even invited new partners to our project. So that was the beginning of it, yeah. And now it's a teamwork, and I expect it to be fruitful and enjoyable.
So a tradition that you keep ongoing.
Yes, I think we share an understanding that, of course, technology is needed in cultural heritage in the humanities. And of course, computer science is an important area, and other techno-sciences are important. And a lot of work are done there and by people with those backgrounds. But it's also important to have people who understand both areas, so to speak. So people with a deep knowledge of cultural heritage and of the computing side. And basically the same for the humanities. And I mean, I don't really know the difference between humanities and cultural heritage anyway, but of course, there are things done in cultural heritage more at the administrative level, which of course is slightly different from common humanities academic work. And I think being able to integrate both humanities work as an academic discipline and the practice of cultural heritage institutions, cultural heritage management, and these areas is also an important link, so to speak.
One of your aims is to create a virtual platform that connects students, teachers, and researchers on an international scale. What do you hope to achieve with it?
We hope that we are able to enable more or less the same with 3D models connected to cultural heritage, which is already done for many other media types. So basically sharing work on discussing, annotating, working on these things in a workspace where normal interaction with 3D models can be combined with annotation in all sorts of different media modalities. So, of course, text annotations, but also video, image, and other things. And this then in a setting where students can work together. And, of course, this was a plan already before the current situation with travel restrictions. But looking at any map, and especially a map of Russia and neighboring countries, we see that working over distance is needed also when there are no pandemics. So being able to work together in shared environment is really useful, and it connects to things we have already done on our side, connected to theater studies, to archaeology, to other things. And of course, it also connects to a strong tradition when it comes to 3D modeling and the use of these technologies, at least in Russia.
So, Øyvind, thank you very much. You have covered practically all the things. So just maybe as how I see it also, a bit futuristic kind of version. But so for me, it's like this platform. I mean, it's like a meeting point of all the stakeholders of the project, like university students of all universities, I mean, teachers, employers. So those who are interested in all the aspects of our work. So all those who are interested in humanities and technologies And so for them, it's like some chance to introduce their ideas, their projects to the wider audience, maybe to exhibit their works. So something like this. So maybe they have mini projects, yes. So this is how I see it.
So it's pooling all the knowledge of different universities over different countries on one platform to access, be accessible to everyone.
Yeah, so it looks like quite an ambitious goal, but it's also the point where they and we also we can meet our so the wider range of public. Yes, some so the wide world, like employers, also from many countries, and so all the people interested in this.
Okay. The project aims to improve the quality of teaching and working in the humanities. With which external partners are you going to be working with? If you don't have any in mind yet, as the project is quite new and just starting, what characteristics are you looking for?
So in the core group of the project, we have Cologne, we have two universities in Greece, one in Cyprus, one in Italy. PADM and three other Russian universities and three universities in Mongolia. But in addition to that, there's already cooperation with cultural heritage institutions in Russia and Mongolia, right?
Yes, yes, it's all right. So have you finished? Yes?
yes. So it was in a way if you could talk about which institutions and a little bit more about the cooperation, perhaps.
So about the cooperation, I could say several things. Like at the moment, I'm researching this concept, I could say, of internationalization of the institution. And this is the thing how our universities can get better. Because especially when we speak about the assuring the high quality of education and teaching, so this is the crucial point to my mind, because it's very difficult to measure the quality of teaching, especially. And so when we're speaking about involving different cultures, different especially international professors, and introducing them to the area of our universities. So this is the point where our internationalized curricula starts, or maybe get more qualified and come to the better results. And then, as I see it, so it must influence the employability of our students. So all these aspects, like getting this international experience to the university, is making the university and the teaching inside. So it's making it to the highest level of teaching. So am I right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So as our students, yes, they get this opportunity to see the other institutions. So the teachers, they are getting involved in this cooperation. They can interconnect, cooperate with the teachers. So of course, it should influence the quality of teaching.
And I also think the possibilities that we already discussed about working closely together with museums with institutions such as museums. Is also something that can really benefit the students. Both directly, as they might be hired, but also through understanding better what is happening, so to speak, out there in reality.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay. What problems, if any, do you think will come up that may be unique to an international project, especially with the Corona situation?
Well, there are always problems. and of course... everything from very practical things, such as currencies and time zones, to the ability to work across different different traditions, different ways of organizing things. But this is, of course, also strongly connected to the benefits of actually working internationally to learn from difference. Of course, Corona is a project where we should have had face-to-face meeting to get to know each other and really plan the work now, which obviously is not happening. So it has to be rescheduled online with the... It's practical in some ways, but it also has a lot of limitations. But I also think that the possibility of organizing student visits, which was really something that was meant to start fairly early, also visits of teachers, this kind of working together in the context where things would be implemented, for instance. This is something which will hopefully come later in the project, but this is of course a challenge, a problem to reorganize this so it we can still do meaningful work the next month, even without traveling.
Yeah, so I would add just a few things like, yes, we sometimes have some issues which can create some problems, but can also create the opportunities. So it means that in this team, I'm sure that we will invent new formats of interaction, of communication. So, of course, it would be better to have face-to-face meetings. But, okay, we will have this kickoff meeting virtual. And so I think that it's just, new format, new circumstances. But we will do our best and we will create what we have. We will manage to do it, yes, I'm sure.
We will, clearly.
Yeah.
I think that sounds like a good plan. I think you will... certainly do that. Last but not least, as always, a question that is unrelated to the project. As this is our international talk, I would like to know what is the strangest thing that you've ever experienced in a foreign country?
Okay, so I will start with my answer first. So I'm I've been to many places. And I've been to Cologne also, and it's a very nice city, and I've been to the university as well. Today I'd like to present not the strangest, but quite an interesting episode, maybe not an episode, but my experience of the language. As I'm still learning the German, I still cannot get the meaning of some words like doch, noch and mal, and I just I trust my German teacher saying that one day it will come and I will feel when it should be not out of place as it sounds today, but on place. So I hope I will manage with this. So that's it about German, but I enjoy it. Yes, and as to the country experience. So each time I perceive it in a different way, and actually it is coming closer to me, maybe with the language again.
I mean, we have a lot of Füllwörter in German.
Yeah, that's it.
So it's understandable that you find those confusing.
So I think I have the same experience. I have been a number of different places, and it has been really... It is difficult sometimes, but it's really, really rewarding to see difference in everything from climate to social conventions to how people are received, everything. But I must actually say that my most surprising place to go is actually quite surprising that it's the most surprising. because the first time I went to the US some 20 years ago, and the problem with the US, when you go there first time, at least for me, is a place you think you know, for good and for bad, surely. But when you come there, you realize it's something totally different. Because it's not a TV show even if you might think so. It's not anything else than humans trying to live in various ways, which is basically what you see everywhere. And added to that, I went for the first time to Texas. Which is to me a fantastically nice place. I'm not saying it's a place without problems, but it's extremely friendly. It has a really, really nice cuisine, and it has a climate I'm surprisingly happy about, because coming from a cold place almost as cold as Parham, I really like warmth, heat, temperature wise. So it was fine in all sorts of ways. But the surprising thing was even more when we later went to some meetings in New York, where people did not ask about Europe, but they asked us a lot of questions about Texas. How was it down there? Did they wear hats? And I think this is the basis for understanding anywhere, is that even if it might look small and similar from a distance, there are usually strong distinctions and strong differences, at least perceived locally, between the village and the next village. And often this is the largest difference in the world people perceive, is between themselves and the neighbor. And this doesn't have to be negative. It can be very constructive and it can be very positive. But the point is, even wherever you go, it's a complexity and it's a lot of different images and it's a lot of different people and it's a lot of different cultures. So understanding that Texas and New York in some ways is as far away from each other as Norway and Turkey is understandable, is useful from both sides. Because when you talk to people from the outside, Europe and surely Western Europe is one thing and it's identical. And there's no cultural differences in Western Europe. And of course, us living here don't exactly see it as this way. But this is something that always follows from this distance. And this is the importance of meeting people, to see that people are really different.
Yeah, that's true.
And also very similar.
Mm, yeah. And sometimes if you talk to somebody else about their neighbor, you get a mirror held in front of your face, and you see how you perceived your neighbor, maybe, with not that different how they did.
Yeah, that's really amazing, yes. Because I also had some, I cannot say the similar experience, but when I first came to New York, I had the feeling that I was in the movie.
Yes.
Like, am I being shot at this moment? Is it a dream or something? And my question to the passerbys excuse me, sir, where is the Manhattan? And he looked at me like down and said, this is Manhattan. And I was like a very small creature on that, among the skyscrapers, like so anecdotic situation, but yes, like in a movie.
Yeah.
And quite different part of the world was in Montana, actually. So quite different, absolutely, like the other planet.
I mean, I think the USA is always a very different experience in different parts of the country, because it's such a big country. I mean, Russia is also very big, but I've never been there, so I wouldn't know. But in the USA, it's a lot of small countries packed into one, like Europe is, but even on a bigger scale sometimes, I think.
Yes, to my mind, absolutely different places for me were Montana and New York, for example. And so the way people communicate and the students and what they wanted and so the teachers, the way they spoke to the students and the atmosphere in the classroom, all was different comparing to Montana and New York and, of course, comparing America and Russia. So frankly speaking, each university and each part of the world has such peculiarities, and this is amazing. I think this is why we are in the international projects and in all these things. Absolutely agree with Oyvind that we are all similar, but we are very different in some way. Yeah,
and it also gives us chances, especially for your project, as when you said the platform is for everybody, you have different perspectives, what is needed and what you can add to it.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, Oyvind, do you agree?
Yes, absolutely. And the first time I went to Russia, I came from Helsinki, a city with, of course, a history as a neighbor and other things with Russia.
Yes.
And I went to three places, St. Petersburg, Moscow, and Murmansk. And I think you find pretty significant differences between these three places. And I would also say that being in Russia in 1992, which that was, and being in Russia the last time last year, is also quite different.
I can imagine, yes. Absolutely different countries. Okay. Absolutely.
So, last question. What else do we have planned for today?
Today...
For me... Yes. Sorry?
No, you, yeah? Please.
Okay. So, for me, it's the end of the day, practically. It's a quarter past six at the moment, and I'm having my, short holiday, 2 weeks, of 2 weeks. So, today, I actually planned to go skiing, this awful weather spoiled my plans because it was minus 30 in the morning. Now it is minus 18, but it doesn't save my daily routine for today. So I'm going to my dance class in the evening and I'm going to have family dinner. That's it for today.
Dance class sounds fun. And yes. I mean, here it's, I think it was minus 3 when I came in. This morning was minus 7 and I was very cold. So I'm very sorry for you. I mean, if you like it, good for you. But I would be freezing.
I would prefer something warmer, you know, some place a bit warmer.
So you can go ski. So minus 2.
Yes, minus 2.
So you can ski well.
Minus 2, minus up to minus 10, we go skiing. But if it is colder...
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Maybe minus 15. Yeah. It was last weekend and we went skiing. Mm. But not today, not minus 30.
When I went to primary school, we could stay inside the buildings between classes when it was colder than minus 15.
Mm. Yeah.
My father was a forestry school teacher and they did not do practical teaching outside when it was colder than minus 35. So between minus 30 and 40 was quite common when I grew up. But on the other hand, this was the inland of Norway where it's very dry and there's basically no wind when it's cold. So it's totally different and it's much worse to be in northern Norway with wind and humidity in minus 20 than minus 35 where I grew up. So temperature is one thing, but humidity, wind, these kind of things are really, really something as well. And I assume that being close to the mountains, you're not totally free of wind all the time.
So, yes, Oyvind, you're absolutely right. I just wanted to add about this, about humidity, that we feel this temperature absolutely different than you in Europe because we have dry weather. So for us, minus 20, it's okay.
Mm.
But with wind, no.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I actually had my last day of teaching today. Because this teaching semester is just ending this week. So I will have one, maybe two meetings short. And then I have some emails to attend to, which is, of course, always nice when the inbox is free.
That's the goal, an empty inbox.
Well, at least an inbox with a size less than one screenful.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Okay, I get that. Okay, thank you very much for being here and talking to me. And have a nice holiday, Natalia.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Enjoy it. And Oyvind, have a nice Vorlesungsfreie Zeit, as we say.
Thank you. Thank you.
And yeah.